The UK's new Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been in office for less than a week, and there are already a lot of questions about how he could change the future of Britain and Europe. Johnson has a lot of critics for his ardent support of Brexit. He is skeptical of the UK's cozy relationship to Europe. He's also made comments widely seen as racist and sexist. And our next guest has been watching Johnson's rise to power with an eye to the 1930s, another time of great political turmoil. Gideon Rockman, chief foreign affairs columnist for the Financial Times, joins us now. Hi, Gideon. Thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
So you are no fan of the new prime minister. Why? Make your case.
Well, I mean, actually, I'm kind of ambivalent about the new prime minister. He's someone I know, have known for a long time, but I am very worried about him. I mean, on a personal level, he's actually quite personable, but he is, I think, extremely reckless. And the fact that he's come to power is also, I think, symptomatic of a kind of deep disorder in British politics that, as somebody was saying to me, you know, our country's been taken over by a highly reckless government, and it's happened very, very fast, and we don't really know where it's going to lead. So whatever his personal qualities, I think he's quite a dangerous leader.
Should I assume then that you feel the same way about Donald Trump, who's often compared to Boris Johnson?
Not least by Trump himself, who in a rather curious phrase said they're calling Johnson Trump Britain, like he's a kind of hotel. But I'm not a fan of Trump. But I think that in a way he violates the taboos of politics with even more abandon than Boris Johnson. You know, the use of racist or quasi-racist language. I mean, you name it, the number of sort of Trump outrages are so rapid. But I mean, I think that in some ways the situations of the two countries are similar. In other ways, they're quite different. The specific challenge of Britain is that we're about potentially to make a massive policy error, Brexit, without a deal with the European Union, that could do real, very rapid economic damage and further radicalize the country. I think with Trump, it's more of a sort of process of degradation of the language of politics and perhaps the institutions.
And I know you've been trying to make sense of the rise of Boris Johnson and of the rhetoric of Donald Trump by taking a look back at the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And the work of a German author named Sebastian Haffner. What can you tell us about how that's changed your thinking?
Well, I didn't actually pick up the book because, as a particular insight into current politics. Just somebody was recommended to me. And like many people, I was quite wary of saying, oh, the 1930s, you know, because comparing people to Hitler is generally frowned upon for understandable reasons.
Right. But this is Sebastian Haffner's memoir, Defying Hitler.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about the memoir, well, the numbers of interesting things, but one of them, it was written in exile in 1939 in Britain, before the war had broken out, before the Holocaust had happened. It's really Haffner's account of growing up as an adult in the 1920s and 30s in Germany and the process of watching the Nazis come to power. And although I'm not saying that either Trump or far less Boris Johnson are fascists, the dilemmas that Haffner was going through and the questions he was asking himself struck me immediately as very reminiscent of our times. I thought, wow, you know, that really is much more recognizable than I thought it would be.
How so?
There's one bit where he's describing the emergence of the far right and in the 1920s before they've taken over and the way that they describe the German state. And it's very similar to the way in which Trumpists denounced the deep state, or in the same happens in Britain. So Haffner writes, with deep hatred, this is actually the Nazis, coined the word system for the impalpable force that held them within bounds. And for the moment, at least, they were held within bounds.
And that could be compared today to something like the deep state that Donald Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of thing. And then another thing where he talks about the reaction of somebody who's kind of in the moderate conventional middle, if you can put it like that, to the emergence of these new political forces. And he says, their revolting jargon, every syllable of which implied a violent stupidity, made me inclined not to take them very seriously, a common attitude among their inexperienced opponents, which helped them a lot. And that reminded me again of something I think people in both our countries are constantly asking, which is, how seriously do I take it? You know, these guys, they don't make any sense. Maybe we should just dismiss them as idiots, but here they are in power.
How did the average German in the 1930s grapple with these political changes that were taking place in the country?
Well, I mean, then here I think is, you know, one big difference. You have to remember Germany had been through a couple of enormous traumas, the First World War, millions of dead, then the hyperinflation of the 1920s. So people were kind of in a state of shock. But I think that one of the things that Hafner is very good on is the realization that not everybody shares his reactions and that people around him actually are becoming Nazis. So there's a very good incident in the book, I mean, good as in interesting, where he is sitting in a library, in a law library in 1933, he's a lawyer, and suddenly there's a commotion and somebody says they're stormtroopers coming through the building and they're throwing all the Jewish readers out of the building. And he says around of him, a couple of people laughed and clapped, and he suddenly realized that these people who he had regarded as fellow civilized lawyers were in fact Nazis. And not at all on his side.
In 2019, now, we often hear moderates who are engaged in this kind of debate about Donald Trump trying to hold back more strident voices on the left, saying, calm down, everything is fine, the Constitution will protect us, the laws of the country will protect us from any one person. Did that resonate in the 1930s?
Yeah, completely. I mean, again, that's a debate that Hafner is having with himself throughout the time. So he says, in looking back to 1933, which was the year Hitler became Chancellor, Hafner wrote that it was true the Chancellor could daily utter the vilest abuse against the Jews, but, and this is me paraphrasing, on the other hand, again, Hafner says, the process of the law was not changed at all. And he says, I must admit I was inclined to view the undisturbed functioning of the law, and indeed even the natural course of daily life, as a triumph over the Nazis. But he, looking back later, 6 years later in London, in exile, he'd oscillated about this. So at times he was calm about it, then at other times he thought this was a kind of outrage. And like many of us now, these debates are going on within families, within generations. And he says, it took me quite a while to realize that my youthful excitability had been right and my father's wealth of experience was wrong, and that there are things that cannot be dealt with by calm skepticism.
I'm speaking with Gideon Rockman, chief foreign affairs columnist for the Financial Times, who's been looking at the 1930s in Europe, in Germany, to get perspective on the world today. And Gideon, I just want to be very clear about this. Again, you are not comparing Donald Trump and Boris Johnson of 2019 to Hitler or Mussolini as you compare these two times, because certainly neither of those men has come anywhere close to organizing and carrying out a genocide. I just think that that's important to say, and I'd like to get more thoughts on that from you.
I think that's right. I think anyone who does that would rightly get a lot of pushback. What I was trying to say in the book, writing about the Hafner book, I think it gave a sense of what it's like to live through a period where you don't know how it's going to end, but you're suddenly in a very new political period where all sorts of things that you thought were pretty unthinkable are happening. Where you have, for example, in the United States, a president that nobody would have imagined would have been president, pursuing rhetoric, policies that were wildly out of the mainstream. And that raises all sorts of questions about where is this going? How should I react? Should I calm down? Should I get radicalized, etc.? There's actually another bit in the book that, again, resonated, where he said to me that he wrote that a big temptation is simply just to start ignoring politics. And I think we all know people who have that reaction to politics now, to say, look, I can't bear to read about it anymore.
As of late, people have been in this country comparing migrant detention centers along the border with concentration camps. That has been widely criticized, but it does resonate for some. And just today, the journalist Ted Koppel, writing in the Washington Post, said that there is a very big difference between migrant centers at the border that lack oversight and a concentration camp that's designed for slave labor and extermination of the unwanted. And he writes that comparisons to Nazi Germany and fascism are rash and overheated.
It's a point of view I definitely respect. No, I think broadly speaking, he's right, but it's a sort of continuum. So obviously what's happening on the border is not Auschwitz. It's not a death camp. But there is an element of the dehumanization of other people, of saying they are the other, the standards that we apply to them are not the same as the standards we would apply to ourselves. And, you know, again, it's crucial to say, look, these are not likely, I think, to turn into death camps. But nonetheless, even the Nazi concentration camps started not as death camps, but as places where you restricted people, where they were holed up and they were kind of prisons behind the wire.
Is nationalism always such a bad thing?
It can be. It doesn't have to be. I mean, I think one of the interesting things is that in the 19th century, nationalism was a liberal cause against, it was a kind of means of liberation for people against sort of imperial oppression. But I think that by the 20th century, it became clear that it could take a much more violent and kind of repressive form in which it involved waging war against others, expanding your own borders, treating out groups in inhumane ways. So it can take different expressions, but it can be. And I think in current reflections often is, a very destructive force, because it tends to see people primarily as a member of a group rather than as an individual. And it defines their identity by their nation rather than in other ways. And I think in some ways, as individuals, we all have multifaceted identities and our nationality, you know, me, British, whatever. It's an important aspect of who I am, but I wouldn't say it's the most important thing. And I think the thing about nationalism is it says that's the thing that really matters.
That's Gideon Rockman, chief foreign affairs columnist for the Financial Times. Gideon, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.